This is the Advanced Analysis and Refutation Lab. For most of the time at these debate camps, at least if I'm involved in it, the word lab means response and interaction, and it also means lots of candy. So if you like candy, this is a good place to be. If you like debate, it's a good place to be, too. But more than that, if you like to learn about analytical thinking, it's a good place to be. This session, as most of them are, is recorded. So just so FYI, so if you're in the room and you say anything, it will be recorded for future generations. I think you'll enjoy this exercise. We're going to have some fun with it. And you're going to learn a lot, too. Let's start by talking about how we analyze when we hear arguments or evidence that's read into a round. Too many debaters, when they hear an argument, they say, oh, well, okay, well, he read a card that said blah, so I guess that's it. We're done. And they roll over and play dead. And they don't do the analysis to think, well, wait a minute, does that argument that he made or that evidence that he read, does it really prove that? And they don't dig in deeper to say, okay, well, what's really going on here in this evidence? Many statements that we hear, whether it be in the media, whether it be in arguments that we have with people, whether it be in a debate round, many statements that we hear have unspoken assumptions or missing facts. And sometimes in our mind we fill in the missing facts rather than challenging the person making the claim and say, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't prove that. You're missing something. We often hear things in our head that are not spoken or written in reality. And I want to challenge you to walk into a debate room with a mindset of questioning and doubting what the other team brings up. If you just naively accept whatever they say, you lose debate rounds. You also don't make a very well-rounded, deep thinker in the real world either, if you just accept whatever anybody says. Now, this is a challenge, a cultural challenge, because you're coming from homeschool families. You're coming from good families. I hope. You should be. I assume. I believe. I believe you're coming from good families. You're coming from families where honesty and integrity are the norm, and you expect those kind of values to be upheld, and that's fine. That's wonderful. That's the way it should be. Every family should be like that. But the challenge is that the rest of the world doesn't always operate that way. Folks, people say things that aren't true in the real world. One of the challenges that we have to learn as we grow up and enter the real world, and you need to start now in policy debate, is just because somebody reads a statement or says something doesn't mean it's true. And when we step into a debate round, you have been assigned to oppose what those people are saying. So you have to flip a switch when you walk in the room in a debate round that says, no, I'm opposing whatever they bring up. Now, you turn that switch off when you walk back out, okay? But when you walk in, your job is to oppose them and to find problems with their analysis. And sometimes it's not as hard as you might think. Another key issue, and this comes up every year, everybody that I coach, I want you to realize that sometimes there's not enough information to reach a conclusion. And very often in real life and in the policy debate room, I don't know is the right answer to a question. Don't be afraid to say, I don't know. That's going to help you a lot in the real world. It's going to help you a lot in policy debate. But too many debaters think that they're going to look bad if they say, I don't know. They're going to, oh, well, it looks like I'm stupid, or it looks like I haven't done the analysis. Let me tell you something. Debaters and people in the real world get themselves in more trouble when they should have said, I don't know, when they make up an answer. It's very often better to just say, I don't know. If you don't know, say, I don't know. That is the right answer. Don't be afraid to give that. I'll show you some examples of where I don't know is the right answer in a few minutes. All right, let's start with this one. I'll throw some candy. Please raise your hand. Don't shout out answers. But please raise your hand. See if you can solve this little riddle. Two chess grandmasters competed in a tournament. They played 15 games and had no ties. And they both won and lost exactly the same number of games. How is this possible?
They didn't play each other.
Okay, they didn't play all their games against each other. Oh, throw that on behind you, if you would, please. All right. Now, a lot of you, when I first read that scenario, what you heard in your mind was that two grandmasters competed in a tournament alone or by themselves. But I didn't say that. But sometimes we hear things in our mind that fill in the gaps of missing information. And then we reach erroneous conclusions as a result. Here's a sign I saw at the grocery store years ago. Every penny counts for children with disabilities. On whom is the money put into the box that's spent? Let me throw candy. Raise your hand if you know the answer. Yes. Let's look for another answer.
We don't know.
We don't know. Why don't we know?
Because it doesn't say.
Oh, it doesn't say. That's just a pleasant thought, isn't it? Every penny counts for children with disabilities. That is a pleasant statement. But it does not promise that any money you put in the box is actually going to be spent on children with disabilities, does it? Doesn't even claim that.
Interesting. I stepped into an elevator in Pennsylvania at a hotel. Checked in, went to the elevator, and I saw this sign on the wall of the elevator. And I immediately thought of policy debate. Tells you what a sick man I am. I read the sign, and I said, you know, I could ask my debate students this question. Where is the elevator safety certificate after you've read this sign? Yes?
Either we don't know or it's sitting somewhere in a bureaucracy.
Okay, I was looking for a binary answer. And binary means a zero or a one. I need like one answer. So what answer do you want to go with? Yes?
Is it any manager's office somewhere?
Not the answer I was looking for. Yes?
I don't know.
Okay, that's the right answer. And why is that the right answer? You have to tell me why to get the candy.
Because it could be in any file, or maybe there's no manager.
Keep going. You're on the right track.
Not on file. Maybe the elevator certificate doesn't exist.
Or okay.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah, who knows? All I know is that what the sign says. I don't know where the certificate actually is because I haven't seen it. I haven't gone into the manager's office to look it up and see if it's there. The sign could be lying, right? Maybe there is no safety certificate. All I have is a sign that tells me that there is a certificate, but I don't know if there really is one or not. So the answer is I don't know. I only know where the sign says it is. That's a different question. All right, true story. Grandma was a high school French teacher. Read that little scenario and answer the question. Yes?
The book can't actually tell you.
Why not?
Because you have to go in and do it yourself. It can't physically tell you.
Well, it says, no, can't give you that.
It's probably a French to English dictionary, not an English to French dictionary.
Nope.
Well, how about a French to French dictionary?
Okay. What does the opening line of the quote say? Second sentence. She left behind what? Okay. What would you expect to find in a French dictionary? French words, right? Did it say there were any English words at all in the dictionary?
No.
Why would a French dictionary have English words in it? So a French dictionary doesn't have any English words. So therefore, there's no way I could look up the translation of an English word in it. Right? But what a lot of you heard in your mind when I read that was a French-English dictionary, didn't you? Some of you heard that. You won't admit it, but some of you did. All right? Listen carefully to what's being said and what's not being said. Here's one from the Bible. How about this one? Analyze this. What did their father say about forgiving the brothers? Yes, in the back. How do you know? I think you're speculating beyond what it says, yes?
Well, it says Joseph's brothers said to themselves this after the father's death. So It's not that it's not like the father said to them to predict it, for just to predict his father.
Okay, and that proves what?
That it was their own words, not the father's.
Well, it might prove that, but it might not. How do you know their father didn't say anything?
Well, chronologically, it says, now after the death of their father, then they say to themselves.
Yeah. Right. Well, go ahead.
We don't know if he said anything or not.
Right. We don't know. We don't know what he said. We don't have anything that rules in or rules out what he did or didn't say, do we? All we have is a statement of the brothers who probably cooked it up after they died, but we don't know that for sure. Doesn't say. We only know what the brothers said their father said, and the text doesn't say if they were lying or not. I'd say there's a pretty good chance they were, but who knows? Doesn't say.
So,
yeah, yeah. So we don't know. And again, if we don't know, say, I don't know. Don't falsely accuse people if you don't know. All right? Well, how about this one? So, other team reads a card. Okay, they've got a card. U.S. troops in Iraq are not there for oil. They're not there at all now, but let's go back to the time whenever this was valid. Okay, I'll update this card someday. I made this up anyway, so it doesn't matter. All right? Somebody reads this card and draws this conclusion. Yes?
It doesn't say anything about either way about whether we're there for oil, so we don't know.
Okay, thank you. This is how the I don't know analysis plays out in the debate round. You list a number of things that it says that the U.S. troops are doing, but it doesn't rule out their underlying motive or rule out that they could be doing other things in addition in regard to oil. So again, be careful about what it says and what it doesn't say, and do the analysis. How about this one? Congress is doing nothing to reduce oil imports. How do we know? Professor Rowell says, yes?
That's only talking about ethanol, but Congress could be doing something else.
Could be, yep. So, again, the evidence is only limited to one issue. Her dentist is going to love our camp. This card is only limited to one issue. They failed to do anything about ethanol. But they could have done bills on 10 other issues. We don't know, because this card is only limited to one particular thing. But I see debate cards like this all the time, where debaters publish stuff and source books or whatever, and they have a tagline like this, Congress is doing nothing. And yet the evidence is only limited to one particular thing, and it doesn't rule out that they could have done other things as well. So it's a logical fallacy that pops up a lot in policy debate. How about this one? Ooh, lots of choices. Yes.
It just says that it has influence, but not that it hurts like worthless.
Okay. Right. Oh, thank you. Nice catch. All right. There's no doubt that Saudi oil gives them undue influence over U.S. foreign policy. Fear the oil spill will be turned off. Okay, no doubt they have influence. Fine. And it's also well known that they've dramatically changed U.S. policy toward Lebanon, Syria, and Egypt in the last 5 years. Okay. We used to stop the card there. And then ask debaters, okay, what's wrong with that? Well, what are examples? So then I said, well, let's make the card a little harder. I threw in some examples. Okay? But even though there's examples in there, where does it say that any of that was hurtful to our foreign policy? All it says is they influenced it. What if those are beneficial changes in our policy? Did Edgar Fripp say that any of that was hurting the U.S.? Nope. The debater is the one saying that. The evidence doesn't say it. So the debater is speculating beyond what the evidence says, or is trying to persuade you of something that goes beyond what the expert actually claimed in his evidence. Alright? It sounds cool, and you'll hear cards like this all the time, but you gotta dig in. When you hear a phrase like hurts foreign policy, well, how exactly does it hurt? Okay? That says it influenced it, doesn't say it hurt it. One of the things I want to challenge you here, what I hope that you challenge all the time and over again in policy debate, and you can phrase it more politely than I'll phrase it here, but what you have to ask yourself over and over and over again, and ask the debaters you go against, is so what? Okay? When I read this, I say, okay, they dramatically changed their policy toward Lebanon, Syria, and Egypt. They relaxed U.S. trade pressure on Syria and a 15% increase in foreign aid to Egypt. My reaction to that is, okay, so what? Why is that bad? Who got hurt? And if you can train yourself to ask so what every time you hear a piece of evidence, that will help you analyze very often and respond in debate rounds a lot more effectively than maybe you're doing today. All right. Let me give you some tips on refutation. My first tip is never use "I don't understand" as an argument. The fact that you don't understand something is interesting, but it doesn't persuade me to vote for you. In fact, all it does is tell me that you don't understand something. And I'm kind of thinking in my mind, okay, so what? So you don't understand it. Why should I vote for you because you don't understand something? Never use that as an argument in a debate round. Here's an example. A debater may get up there and say, well, now his first advantage about increased economic growth, well, I don't understand how the economy improves just because we're using more nuclear power. Okay, you don't understand it. Why should I vote for you? Here's a better way to phrase that. What if we turned it around and made it a more powerful argument? Instead of saying, I don't understand, what if we said, now his first advantage about increased economic growth, he never explains how the economy improves just because we're using more nuclear power. Can you hear how that's a much more powerful argument? Because now I'm thinking, well, yeah, you're right, he never did explain that. Now it's gone from the problem being me not understanding to them not explaining. Now it's their problem. It's their fault. And they're the ones who've got some, as Ricky Ricardo used to say, they got some splaining to do, right? I Love Lucy. None of you, okay. Folks in the back know what I'm talking about. Okay, they got some splaining to do. Okay? It's their problem, it's their fault, they're going to have to clear this up. So don't vote for them until they clear this up. Actually, don't vote for them ever, but don't vote for them because they haven't cleared this up. Their fault. Never make suggestions for ways to improve the affirmative plan. You ever heard debaters do this in the negative? They'll get up there and say, well, a 700-mile fence will still leave 1,300 miles unprotected. If a fence is a good idea, they should put it across the entire border. Okay, so the negative is suggesting ways to improve the affirmative plan. Don't do that. That doesn't persuade me not to vote for them. It persuades me their plan's pretty good, and then we can improve it later, maybe. But it's not a negative argument. Your job is to defeat the plan, not improve it. Instead, turn it around. A 700-mile fence would still leave 1,300 miles unprotected. That means their plan can't solve. So therefore, don't vote for it. Okay, it's gone from improving the plan to defeating the plan. Change your mindset. You're not there to reach an amicable settlement with the other team. You're not there to negotiate a peace agreement with them and come up with something the judge can buy into. You're there to defeat their plan if you're negative. So defeat it. Show me why this is a fatal flaw in their plan and they shouldn't vote for it. Number three, the fact that the status quo isn't doing it is not a reason to vote negative. Too many debaters think it is. They get up there and say something like this, which I heard in the debate round. Now, the harms of U.S. troops stationed in Europe. Well, if this is really such a big problem, why hasn't the status quo already done something about it? Well, because they haven't heard our plan, obviously. That's what I'd say if I were affirmative. The fact that this is what could be called in big, deep, hypothetical, theoretical classes, if you want to go that far, could be called a tautology. In other words, we shouldn't do it because we're not doing it. Okay, what does that prove? Nothing. It's reasoning in a circle. Status quo isn't doing it because the status quo isn't doing it. We shouldn't do it because we're not doing it. It proves nothing. There's no analysis there. Give me something more than that. Number four, never assume anything. I heard this one in debate round one time. I get all this stuff from actual debate rounds that I go to. Never use the word assume when you're talking about you or your arguments or your facts. You have no right to assume anything. If you can do that, so can the other team. In other words, the other team can just say, well, we can assume that all evidence is wrong and therefore vote for us. If assuming is okay, why not? So never assume any facts that you need. If you need a fact to be in the round, read a piece of evidence that brings that fact into the round. Don't assume your facts. You wouldn't like it if the other team did that to you, and they would defeat you very easily if they could. And that brings to number five, never assert your own facts. I heard this one in the debate round. Well, now France spends $2 trillion per year on defense, so there's no reason they should be criticized not doing their part. Well, in fact, he got the numbers wrong. That's like the total economy of France is $2 trillion. They don't spend that on defense. But he was making up his own numbers, getting them wrong, and then using that to try to persuade me in a debate round. You can't do that. If you need facts to be in the round, then read the evidence and persuade me using the evidence. But don't make up your own facts. And don't assume your own facts. Inside your speeches, make arguments, don't ask questions. When you ask a question like that, when you get up there and say, okay, now, why should the U.S. do this when other countries can pay for this just as easily? To whom are you asking that question when you ask that question? The judge. Is the judge obligated to answer? Is it his job to answer questions like this? No. When should you be asking questions?
Cross X.
Okay, so ask questions in cross X and make arguments in speeches. I can't tell you how many times I've heard debaters, even some of them who thought they were advanced debaters, get up there and start arguing with the guy in cross X. And then his partner will come up in the next speech and say, well, I want to know where his funding is going to come from. And I want to know why we should do this when other countries can pay for it. And I want to know this and I want to know that. Why didn't you ask him in cross X? You had him up there for 3 minutes. You could have asked all that. Instead, you wasted your time arguing with him in cross X. Now you're in your speech, supposed to be making arguments, and instead you're asking questions. You got it exactly backwards. Yes.
Now, this accepts the idea of making a rhetorical question that you then go and answer yourself.
Exactly. Yes. You can raise this as long as you answer the question yourself. Yeah, in fact, I'll throw you candy for that. It's a good analysis. Very good. Turn the question into an argument and a reason to vote for you. Okay, rephrase it so that you're making the argument instead of just asking a question in your speech. Challenge the underlying philosophy or the line of reasoning being presented. I've taken the evidence out, and I've just put in here the outline of an argument from a debate case. What kind of cross-ex questions would you ask? Assuming they had a reasonable piece of evidence that supported all this, let's not even talk about what the evidence says. Let's talk about the line of reasoning itself. How could we question in cross-ex this line of reasoning? Yeah.
Why should we care?
Why should we care? Yeah, in other words, I wrote it for you in big black letters. So what? So what if legitimacy is decreased? So what if they decrease their ability to fulfill obligations? What obligations, and what's the impact if we don't fulfill them? In other words, this outline is an outline of gravy. There's no meat there. In other words, what obligations? And so what if we don't fulfill them? Legitimacy is harmed. So what? Why do we need legitimacy? Who cares? Give me the impact of these things and dig deeper into these types of issues. Don't just accept them at face value. That, oh, legitimacy is harmed. I better vote affirmative. No. Challenge it. Ask that so what question to everything you hear. Those are the questions I would ask. Why does legitimacy matter? Is this the only thing blocking legitimacy? What would they do with it if they had it? Would those things be good or bad? Challenge the warrant. What do I mean by challenge the warrant? When you read this card, what's your reaction to it? This is from the New York Times. So they're quoting this guy. New York Times is making this point, not me. How would you analyze this quote if you read it in the newspaper? Yes?
It doesn't say what goes beyond the U.S. interest besides oil. It doesn't specify.
You're on the right track. Explain to me what you mean.
Well, it says that the stability of Nigeria matters for reasons beyond this enumerated list, but it never actually gives any other reasons. It just says, well, there are reasons.
Okay. Yeah, I'll throw you candy for that. I think you're right. Yes?
It doesn't say how it affects the prosperity and stability of the whole.
Here's the thing. You're on the right track, and you're almost there. Let me finish this out. Nigeria's stability and prosperity affect the whole of West Africa. Okay. Even if I grant that, how does it follow in the next sentence? And so is vital for the United States. Why does the United States care about the stability and prosperity of West Africa? Why does that matter to us? I don't know. I mean, this guy never finishes the argument. I think what Goldman is doing when he writes this is he's just asserting that, okay, Nigeria's stability and prosperity affect the whole of West Africa. I mean, given Nigeria's size, that's probably true. But how does it then follow that therefore it's vital for the United States? What if we just ignore it? What's going to happen in the United States? I don't know. Does Goldman ever give you any reasoning as to why if we just ignored Nigeria, anything bad would happen in the United States? I don't see it in this article. So he's just making this assertion, and even if he is an expert, he's not justifying why the assertion is true. There's no warrant for that claim. You see where I'm going with that?
Can you define warrant?
Warrant means a reason why something is true. Some supporting analysis, some supporting evidence that props up the claim. He makes a bold claim here, but he never gives any support for it in the last sentence. This isn't a bad card. I mean, you could read this card in the debate round, but if I were going against it, I wouldn't just roll over and play dead. I would challenge it. I would say, well, why does Goldman says it, but why? Why is it vital for the U.S. if stability and prosperity are happening in West Africa? Why should we care? How does it hurt or harm or help the U.S. at all? Okay, and my favorite, so what? This is quoted from a debate book last year, not Blue Book. We don't do stuff like this. But a different book that will remain nameless. But I put this in there because this is an actual argument that somebody made. So I'm not making this up. This is what you will hear in a debate round. Somebody made this argument in a debate round. How would you analyze it? Take a few minutes. I'll give you a few minutes to read that. Yeah.
Why are inefficient safeguards important?
Yeah. That's my reaction to that card. And what makes this worse... Oh, sorry. What makes this worse is, how did he tag this at the top? Yeah, is what? What's he calling, claiming that is?
Power tagging.
It is an... it's an impact to a harm. Yeah. Okay, that's what makes this even worse. He's telling me that the so what is, whoa, if we don't do this, we'll have ineffective safeguards. Oh, the humanity. Ineffective safeguards. That's it. I'm voting affirmative. Because I don't want to have ineffective safeguards. But here's the thing. If I can say so what to it, it's not an impact. So what if we have ineffective safeguards? Why is that a problem? See, I can still say so what to it. So we haven't got to the impact yet. He's labeling it an impact. But if I can still say so what to it, then folks, it's not an impact. What should he have done instead? It's okay to read a card that says ineffective safeguards, although what you can't do, and I'm sorry, I'm a little harsh here, but I don't like it when debaters do this. Okay, what's all this stuff about Syria, South Korea, Libya, Myanmar, all known to have nuclear power projects? Says who? Is that in the card? No, he made up his own facts and threw them in there. Hey, don't do that, folks. Don't make up your own facts. Yeah, what should he have done?
Should have made it a harm. Like, ineffective safeguards are bad.
Yes. And then he should have done what? You're right. Keep going. And then what?
Well, not have his own stuff.
Right. And then what?
Should have argued that...
He should have read a piece of evidence that says what? After he reads this one, then what?
Why the arms are bad.
why the ineffective safeguards are bad. Yes, he should have read a card that said, if we have ineffective safeguards, then Iran gets a nuclear weapon. And then what? Because I can say, so what to that? Lots of bad people. Pakistan has nuclear weapons, right? India has them. Soviet Union had them. They were bad people. Okay, so what if Iran gets a nuclear weapon? That's not an impact. The impact is then the next card that he reads that says, if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, they will set it off and kill 1 million people. All right, I can't say so what to that. Okay, because that's going to sound really stupid if I say so what to that. Okay, so when you get to the point where it would be really stupid to keep saying so what, then you've got to the point of an impact. When somebody's actually getting hurt, suffering, dying, money being lost, okay, or the risk of any of those things going up. Then you've got to the point where we're not going to say so what anymore, and then you've reached the impact. That's the kind of analysis you have to do to win debate rounds, folks. You've got to keep asking so what until you can't say so what anymore. And if you can say so what to it, then the argument's not finished. This plays out in real life, but let me give you a real life application. My boss tasked me to write a plan, in fact, to write a plan for a project that we were putting together when I was working on computers for a retail store company. We got in the meeting and I had to explain the plan to the team that was assembled. One of the people that was assembled was the manager of the team that should have been writing the plan. Okay, but his team didn't feel like doing it, so it got assigned to me. So naturally, the manager of that team had to criticize the plan because his team didn't come up with it. And I knew that was where this was headed. So being the debater that I was, his question, he looked over the plan, and the plan had 8 steps in the plan. And his first analysis was, well, I don't think there's enough steps in this plan. And you know what I said? I said, well, Jim, how many steps should there be? Oh, well, I don't know. Let's move on. Okay? So I completely shut down the whole line of criticism by just asking some simple questions. Okay? Well, I don't think there's enough steps. Well, how many should there be? Oh, I don't know. All right, let's move on. Boom. Criticism is over. All right, there we go. Read the fine print is my next refutation advice to you. What do I mean by the fine print? The part they don't underline. Too many debaters and, sadly, too many source books. This is from I cut and pasted this directly from a source book, okay? Not Blue Book. We don't do this. But I copied this from another source book. All right. There's the tagline. The response is slow. Lack of contingency fund means WHO has to take time to gather resources. You can read all that. There's the evidence to support that claim. Response is slow. And they need money. Does that card prove that? Well, maybe. I have a tentative hand in the back. But yes? Okay.
It does, because the middle says that the claim they're trying to make is that the problem even exists. Before you can argue that the response is slow, you actually need to have a problem to solve, otherwise it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's the problem. I sure wouldn't use this card if I were trying to prove that WHO was slow. Because, if you look in the not underlined part, it actually says the whole thing might be bogus. Because it might just be a trick to raise money. So why would you cite this? But debaters often don't catch this. They listen to the part that, because the only part that's read is the underlined part. And it's not unethical to do this. It's bad debating, but it's not unethical. Because they did what would be unethical would be to cut that sentence out and then squeeze the rest together. I've seen debaters do that too. You can get thrown out of tournaments for doing that, and you should be thrown out. Alright? But they left it in there to be ethical. Okay, fine, but it's still bad debating because your own evidence is contradicting the point you're trying to make. And what you have to do is get up there and ask for their evidence. Okay, let me see that card you read about response is slow. And then have your partner take that card, bring it back up to the podium and say, now judge, on their card where it says response is slow, let me read you the rest of the part that they didn't read. He goes on to say in the quote, but actually, most people recover without ever being treated. And not all experts are convinced it merits such attention. And some critics even suspect the UN is using it as a convenient way to raise money. And that was in their evidence, Judge. You wouldn't believe what you can uncover sometimes when you get their evidence and read the rest of it to the judge. I tell you, judges are persuaded by that kind of thing. They hear that and they say, I wonder what else he's not telling me. So get their evidence and read the fine print. Not good. Bad debating. I'm cutting and pasting these directly as the debaters are using them, so I'm not making up these examples. This is exactly the kind of analysis you get in debate rounds.